This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 32. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
All right, free market squad and the place to be. Thank you for taking an hour of your day to hang with me. I do appreciate it. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show, the only podcast dedicated to helping you be your own boss, both politically and professionally. I am your host with a hero complex, Nathan Fraser. But you, more importantly, you are the free market squad. Thank you again for showing up. I do appreciate it. Before we jump into it, I want to give a big shout out to a couple of the networks that air this unprogramming. First of all, truthfrequencyradio.com. Much love to Chris and Cherie. And thank you both for being there and supporting me over this last couple of months when I kind of hit a rough patch. And thank you for holding my slot and welcoming me back with open arms. I really do appreciate that. Also, Jules over at UCY.TV, much love to you, and thank you for doing the same thing as well. I really appreciate your guys' understanding. And, of course, LRN.FM. Ian Freeman runs LRN.FM, and just a huge labor of love that he puts in over there. And he's actually right now he's trying to get funding for a satellite. They've been broadcasting this type of programming and a lot of other freedom oriented programming over at LRN.FM. They've been broadcasting this type of material over South Africa for the last like 5 years, I believe. And they've not monetized it at all. It's just going out for free to try and spread these ideas. But the satellite is up for another payment, and they're doing a fund drive right now to try and raise some funds to get that satellite paid for again. Again, as far as I know, I don't think Ian is making any money off of putting this message out. He just believes in getting this message out to as many people as possible. And in that area of the world, they don't have the privilege. I'm feeling triggered. They don't have the privilege of uncensored internet like we do. And a lot of them, the only way that they get these kind of messages are through the efforts of what Ian and his crew over at LRN.FM are doing. So if you want to take part in helping that be accomplished, go over to LRN.FM and check that out for sure. And of course, if you want more of this type of unprogramming that you're going to hear throughout the show today, you can always go to NathanFraserShow.com. So without any further ado, let's just go ahead and jump into it. And I'm not even going to tease out how the show is going to play out. I'm just going to let it go because it's that good. That's why. So let's go ahead and start with segment one, the Live Free FM Lessons on Liberty. And we're going to be talking about something that I call the guru effect. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, let's start with a story about a girl named Jane. Jane just started hanging out with a new crowd. She's never really fit in anywhere else. She's never really had too many friends. She's had one best friend, but she was never popular. She never really felt accepted with anybody. But she found this new crowd. She found some people that seemed to accept her. And for the first time in her life, she felt good. She was happy. And it was great. Her parents were stoked. They were like, what? Our little Jane finally found some friends. But pretty soon, Jane started becoming distant with her family members. She stopped talking to them. Her attitude started changing. She started kind of becoming closed off, and her family started to worry. They didn't know exactly what was going on with her. And then her best friend, her only friend, started noticing that she didn't really see Jane very often anymore either. And her best friend went to her family and talked to her parents and was like, yeah, I haven't seen Jane in a week or maybe more. And before that, it was just periodically. And I'm not sure what's going on. Is she mad at me? And Jane's parents were like, no, she's been hanging with this new crowd. And to be honest, we don't see her that often anymore either. In fact, Jane started spending more and more time with this new crowd until she was really never, ever found without them. And then one day, to the shock and horror of Jane's best friend and Jane's family members, Jane was given a pair of Nikes and a glass of Kool-Aid, and Jane was found dead, along with every single one of the new friends that Jane had made over the last month or so. So what happened? What caused this drastic change in Jane's behavior and eventually led Jane to commit mass suicide? How is it that people can get so under the control of another person that they will commit suicide, that they will sacrifice themselves for this other person? Now, this might seem like a far-fetched story, but these type of things happen all the time. Before I was born, or maybe right around the time I was born, I remember hearing the story of Jim Jones and the Jonestown cult or whatever. This group of I want to say it was at least a couple hundred people, maybe 1,000 people, that all ended up committing suicide, like in a mass suicide ritual. Also the Hale Bob Comet, I can't remember the guy's name, goofy white dude, convinced all of his followers that, and don't quote me on this, this is just memory, convinced him that the Hale Bob Comet was going to take them away on a spaceship that was following behind it. And the only way they could do it was to put on their Nikes and drink some Kool-Aid. And they found all of those people dead. Like, what makes rational people capable of going to these types of extremes? It seems incredibly crazy to me that that somebody would be able to do this. And it happens all the time, though. And it doesn't really make sense until you understand something that is called the guru effect. And you know, to be honest, I don't know if the guru effect is an actual thing or if it's just something that I made up. But I heard somebody talking about this in marketing, and I'm gonna bring it back to marketing in the second part of the show. But it's something that I see cult leaders take advantage of all of the time. And it kind of works like this. So if you make enough statements that somebody will agree with, eventually they'll stop being so critical with their analysis of your rhetoric. So if they agree with you enough times, eventually they'll turn off their inner critic and they'll assume that they agree with you on other things that they might otherwise question. It's kind of like a shutting down. It's like a mental laziness. They get lazy and they start letting you have influence over their own thoughts. They start to trust you and they let their walls come down. They let their defenses come down. And the scary part of this is that a lot of people will even let you take complete control of the steering wheel. Once they trust you enough, once you as the guru have provided enough pieces of evidence that your knowledge of something is at least on par with theirs or even superior to theirs, then they'll just let you take the steering wheel altogether. And there's certain steps that gurus will go through to get you to this point where you're willing to let them take the steering wheel for you. So first of all, the very first step is that you have to, like I said, you have to tell them things that they agree with. You have to tell them things that they feel. You have to relate to them. You have to you have to kind of meet them with an overlay of your two maps. You have to say things that they agree with. You have to get them saying yes to a lot of your rhetoric. Then you have to give them an enemy to blame for their problems. Somebody that they can point outward and say, yeah, it's their fault that my life sucks. And then you help them throw rocks, not literally, because that's assault, but you help them throw rocks verbally or rhetorically at that enemy. And once you've given somebody else an enemy and you've helped throw rocks at that enemy, those people will start to see you as an ally. So in the cult example, they'll tell you your family doesn't get you. Society doesn't understand you. Society is your enemy. And then they'll tell you, us in this circle of trust, we're your true family. We're the ones that understand you. And once you've gotten somebody to that point, they're more likely to start withdrawing from the outside world and start becoming more and more consumed with the cult. And cult members aren't the only ones that fall victim to this, or I guess maybe cult members as most people think of them, because politicians and political news pundits, they do this very frequently and very effectively, to be completely honest. Politicians pander to the audience or their target demographic. They say exactly what they know their target demographic wants to hear. They say things, they make promises that they know that the people want to hear. And everybody knows politician before the election, the politician says one thing. After the election, the politician says something completely different or does something completely against what they promised they were going to do in order to get elected. They pander to an audience, they pander to a target demographic. And a lot of times they pick a scapegoat for their potential voters to blame for why things suck in the world. And on the left, the typical go-to scapegoat is going to be the greedy 1%, the evil capitalists, the evil CEOs that are ruining the planet and hoarding all the money, and it's their fault that you're poor because it's a fixed pie and they can only be rich if you're poor. That's pretty much the go-to scapegoat for the left. They'll pick them out. They'll say it's their fault. They're the enemy, and they'll help you throw rocks at them. And on the right, typically they pick immigrants. That seems to be the go-to enemy for people on the right, is the evil brown people that are crossing the border and taking your jobs and raping your white women. And they'll point the finger at them. They'll say, this is why the economy sucks, or this is why everybody's going to die in terrorist attacks. It's because of the evil brown people. And they'll help you throw rocks at them. And this isn't just politicians. This is definitely the pundits, the people that get you fevered up to get you behind the politicians. And you'll maybe notice, maybe you've fallen victim to this thinking, you'll notice that even if you don't hate these groups at first, if you agree with the guru enough about other things, you'll eventually start to agree with them about the enemy that they parade in front of you as well. So even if you don't hate Mexicans, but you understand a Republican's view of economics, if that Republican spokesperson or Republican candidate says enough things that you do agree with on politics, when he starts talking about this group that you didn't hate initially, you might be a little bit more susceptible to his rhetoric or her rhetoric. I don't want to be sexist. Females have equal rights and are just as capable of being hate mongers as men are. So same thing on the left. Maybe you agree with some lefty politician about issue A and issue B, but you're not completely convinced that it's the Koch brothers that are responsible for everything. But if you agree with them enough on issue A and issue B, when they bring up issue C, or issue K, O-C-H, as it may be, you might be a little bit more likely to be like, yeah, you know what? Those Koch brothers, they are at the root of all of our problems, aren't they? Maybe I didn't get that at first, but after listening to you for these last 6 months, I'm really starting to understand why you hate those Koch brothers so much. So this happens a lot. And it's not always right away, and I don't even think it's always intentional, but the thought leaders of any particular political movement tend to say a lot of things that their target demographic will agree with, and they very often, and I would say almost 100% of the time, pick an enemy to blame things on. Sometimes it's just the other side. Vote for us because that other party will win, and that other party is destroying America, and that other party is the root of all the problems, and let's all throw rocks at the other party. Now get behind us and support our candidate and get out and vote. And it works on both sides of the aisle. Both parties do this all the time. And I've been seeing this a lot lately in what has kind of become like the alt-right authoritarian community that used to be libertarianism. A lot of people who used to espouse to be anarcho-capitalists or used to espouse to be libertarians have gone completely alt-right authoritarian now that there's a non-governmental entity or enemy to blame, to point fingers at, and to throw rocks at. Alex Jones is a great example of somebody who 15 years ago said Muslims are patsies and government is the real terrorist. And now 15 years later, Muslims are the real terrorists and go vote for Trump. Turn to government to solve the problem. So a complete reversal. And a lot of people that were attracted to Alex Jones's original rhetoric have fallen completely in line with his new rhetoric. And I have a lot of friends that are like all on board the Trump train. And I don't get it because I definitely don't see Trump as any better than any other politician. Yet these guys are like about it. Same thing with Stefan Molyneux and Chris Cantwell. They all three seem to be drinking the same Trump Kool-Aid, and you know, a lot of their followers, a lot of people who 3 years ago were hardcore anarchists have turned into authoritarians and turned into, we need the government to build giant walls and crack down on our freedom of mobility in order to solve this problem, in order to help us throw rocks at this enemy. So, and whether the enemy is real or not, I'm not really going to get into that. I know Muslims that I would say are absolutely no threat. In fact, I've known a lot of Muslims, and I can't think of a single one that I think I need a wall to be built to protect me from. But at the same time, does that mean that I think all Muslims are like peaceful people? No, because Muslims as well, just like anybody else, can fall victim to exactly what I'm talking about, this cult think where, we'll talk about that here a little bit more. Infiltration and co-opting of movements. This is something that happens very frequently where I think the first example that I ever heard of was something called Project Mockingbird. It was a CIA program where they would put CIA agents in positions of leadership inside of movements that were a threat to the establishment, to the status quo. And they would get their own people inside of these groups, and they would move these people up into positions of leadership by mocking the rhetoric that was there, by agreeing with the rhetoric that was being espoused, by also taking on this rhetoric and screaming at the loudest. They would move their agents up into the tops of these groups, and they would take over the groups, and they would destroy the groups from the inside. The very first instance that I heard of this being used was in something called the Black Panthers, which was a group that was a huge threat to the government back in the day. And the paperwork, it's all been declassified. They openly admit they had people infiltrate the Black Panthers. They had them say things that a lot of the Black Panthers agreed with in order to get them high up positions inside of the Black Panthers. And then they took over and they destroyed the movement from the inside. I think this also is what happened to the anti-war hippie movement. There was a lot of people that were very anti-establishment, anti-war during that time, during the 60s. And eventually all of those peoples or the majority of those people ended up turning into complete drug addict burnout acid heads. And I don't think that was a coincidence. I think that the same thing that the powers that be did to the Black Panthers, I'm pretty sure they probably infiltrated and used the guru effect to take over and run the hippie movement into the ground. Being from LA, having grown up most of my young life in Los Angeles, I am absolutely positive that this is what happened to the gangs. When I was growing up, the gangs were at some of their most violent times. This was back in the 80s. And I heard stories from my uncles and my dad about how back in the day in the 70s, the gangs were started as protection from dirty cops and from drug dealers and pimps. And then eventually the gangs themselves turned into the drug dealers and the pimps. And I don't think that it was completely organic. I'm pretty sure that I did a video on this a long time ago about how there's lots of traces of secret society and different influences inside of the gang culture. I'm still convinced that there's more to the creation of the gang culture than what there appears to be on the surface. And right now, in our current day, we're watching it happen again with the Black Lives Matter movement. It started out as an anti-police violence movement, and it's turned into people blocking ambulances from saving people's lives in the middle of traffic. It's turned into people walking out into freeways and making people late to work. It's turned into people standing on street corners and not allowing people to get where they need to go. It started out as a group that was supposed to be fighting racism, and now it seems to be that a lot of the people inside the Black Lives Matter movement are actually creating more racism than existed before. And I don't think that this is coincidental. I would bet the farm that there have been people put in, agent provocateurs, like Mockingbird type people, put into the Black Lives Matter movement to take something that is a threat to the status quo and to turn it into something that basically eats itself from the inside out. And again, I don't think all the people involved are bad, but I think that the guru effect takes over, and it can destroy a good cause. And I honestly believe that this is something that we see with a lot of Muslims as well. I don't think that all Muslims are bad and evil, like some people on the right or the alt-right would want you to believe. I think that a lot, and in fact, I know that a lot of Muslims are good, decent people. But I think that they fall victim to the guru effect too. And I think that there's been people placed in the leadership in a lot of Muslim communities who are this exact same type of thing. These people who are put there to control a movement and direct it. So this is, I guess this is what it really comes down to. Oftentimes we see government agents, if they can't stop a parade, they'll jump out and join the parade, and they'll work their way up to the front of the parade, and they'll start leading the parade, and they'll take it in a totally different direction, a direction that they want it to go, and they'll lead it down a dead end and straight into a brick wall. And all of these examples that I talked about today are examples, in my opinion, of that exact thing happening, and the way that they're able to accomplish it is the guru effect. And we'll get more into that a little bit later on in the show. For right now, though, I want to change topics a little bit, and I want to talk about what's going on in Nathan Fraser land. So just a couple of things really quick. First of all, super, super stoked about this. I've been invited to speak at Liberty on the Rocks in Westminster, which is like a suburb of Denver, Colorado, which is my neck of the woods right now. And so that's going to be dope. I'm going to be talking about copywriting secrets and how they can be used to improve liberty activism. And as far as I know, they're going to be recording it. So once the video is available, I'm going to make it available to you guys as well. Also, I've mentioned last week that I started making an email course, a warm-up Hero's Journey email tutorial type course that teaches you how to do a 5-day Hero's Journey email autoresponder to warm up new people to your brand or to your list. This is something that'll help podcasters, activists, and marketers. And if you're looking to start up an email list or looking to build your list for any kind of activism or for any kind of marketing, you definitely need to be involved with this webinar. There's only going to be 100 slots available, though. So if you want in, make sure that you get signed up. I'm going to have a link over at NathanFraserShow.com. It'll somehow communicate that it's going to be for an email webinar. Click on that image, get registered, and do not miss out on it. There will not be a replay. I might redo it in the future, but if you miss it this time, there's no guarantee that it will ever be available again. When we come back, more on the Guru Effect. Nathan Fraser Show, Anarchopreneur. I'm out of here. No, I'm not. I'll be right back.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. You can check out more over at NathanFraserShow.com. You can also catch us every Sunday night on the Truth Frequency Radio Network and UCY.TV. Also, picked up and rebroadcast over at LRN.FM. A huge thank you to everybody that makes this show possible. And of course, a huge thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time each week. I really do appreciate it. And so without any further ado, I'm going to jump back into the show. So in the first part of the show, I started talking about something called the Guru Effect and how seemingly logical people can be taken for a ride by other people. How we see these like cult leaders have this guru-like ability to manipulate just huge amounts of people and get them to do just crazy, crazy things. And we also see in the political arena, we see politicians and news pundits be able to manipulate like entire groups of people, entire demographics of people. And I kind of touched on some of the ways that they do this, some of the ways that I see these politicians and these news broadcasters manipulate people. And I also talked about movements and how movements have been co-opted. People with, in my opinion, a lot of times the best intentions in the world, and these people turn into basically villains in the eyes of society. And we've seen it happen with the gang culture. We've seen it happen with things like Black Lives Matter recently. I also believe that a lot of times in religion, I mean, most people who are religious, it's because they're good people, but because they get caught up in the groupthink, because they get caught up in the guru effect and the cult mentality that seems to permeate a lot of religious culture, we see seemingly good people do some pretty horrifying things. And this isn't just like right now with the war on terror. This is pretty much all religions all throughout history. And I'm not like a militant atheist who bashes on religion, but this guru effect definitely plays a role in manipulating religious people, just like it plays a role in manipulating politically active people, just like it plays a role in manipulating different types of social movements that sprout up. And I believe that maybe not always is it intentional. Maybe it's not always things like Project Mockingbird. But I do think that some people understand how this guru effect works. They use it to their own advantage. And we were talking about, or at least I was talking about, how this works. And while we're on the topic, being a news broadcaster myself, definitely understand this when you're listening to me. Understand that you probably are susceptible to this. And if I say a lot of stuff that you agree with, and I then say something that you totally don't agree with, don't give me a free pass. Intellectually challenge me. Don't just let down your guard and be like, well, Nathan says all these other things that I agree with, and then I say something crazy. Don't just automatically agree with me. If I say something that raises a red flag with you, it's probably because it should. And it's probably because I'm misinformed, or maybe you're misinformed, but don't just get lazy and let me do your thinking for you, because the whole point of explaining this to you is so that you don't fall victim to this. That's why I went into this whole tirade. So definitely don't allow me to become your guru either. So now I'm going to talk about how you can use this in your marketing. And maybe we'll tie it in to how it can be used in other areas as well. Maybe how it can be used in your activism. But like all things, persuasion. I don't see any of these things as a single-edged sword where it can only cut one way. I see everything as a double-edged sword. I see all of these things where, yes, it's a technology, it's an understanding, it's a kind of like a secret knowledge that some people can take advantage of for bad. But I believe that this knowledge, I don't believe the knowledge itself is bad. I don't believe the guru effect itself is bad. I believe that bad people with this knowledge can do horrible things with it. Like I laid out with cult leaders and politicians, I think that, and talk show hosts as well. I think that they can use the guru effect to very malevolent ends, but, I'm going to teach you how you can use this to, in my opinion, do some good in the world. So this is how the guru effect can be used in marketing. And I'm going to start off with a warning. First of all, this isn't mind control. This isn't like you can hypnotize people into buying your products if you understand how this works. But it is an incredibly effective influence tactic. And I use this I use this basic understanding in my activism all the time. I'm going to 100% admit it. In fact, this talk that I'm going to be giving in Denver or Westminster at the Liberty on the Rocks, I'm going to talk about how I use this understanding in my activism. It's incredibly effective. And in my opinion, it's only bad if you're using it to bad ends. It's like a gun. A gun can be used to kill people. A gun can be used to defend people. It's all in the, it's in the hands of the holder. It's in the heart of the person wielding the tool. So I showed you how this can be used for bad. You know, I already laid out how, if you really wanted to use this knowledge for evil, I've laid it all out for you. It's all there. But I figured I might as well show you how you can also use this for good, i.e. selling people things that they need, getting your product into the hands of the people that need your product. So, the first thing that we talked about was, meeting people in the, meeting people where your maps overlay. We talked about with the cult leader where he's sympathetic and he tells you, yes, I understand. And he tells you all these things that you already agree with. Your family doesn't like you. Society is against you. All of that. Start off with easy yeses. Start off with yes statements. Start off with questions, asking questions that you know you're going to get a yes response. Things that you know that your prospect or your potential customer is going to say yes to. So like an example would be in the weight loss. Most of these that I'm going to give examples for will be in like the weight loss area because most people are very familiar with how weight loss is advertised. So in the weight loss arena, questions that will start off the conversation with easy yeses are things like, are you trying to get in shape for summer? Wouldn't it be great to have a beach body for this summer? Have you tried things in the past and failed? Are you worried that nothing out there is going to work for you? For a lot of people, every single one of these questions is going to be answered with yes. For the target people that a weight loss program is going to go after, every single one of these questions is going to end with a yes. So, and if it's March or February and they're already thinking, man, I need to get in shape. I'm not doing so well on my New Year's resolution. I still got this extra flab that I need to get off. They're already having that conversation in their head. So you're joining the conversation that's already going on because they're already thinking to themselves, I need to lose this extra weight before it gets warm out, but I'm not being able to do it. And I can't use that diet last year because I did that yo-yo diet last year. And as soon as I lost it, 4 months later, it was back on again. So they're already having these yes statements going on there in their head. You just have to ask the questions that get them to say yes. Join the conversation that's already going on in their head. Meet where your maps have some overlay and then work from there. Meet where your maps, where you can lay your map on top of them and you say, oh yeah, right here and right here, our maps meet together, and then try and work from there. The other thing that I was talking about was confirming suspicions and giving an enemy to blame and helping them throw rocks at that enemy. You'll remember all of the examples that I gave earlier of picking out a part of the population that you can blame all of the problems on and pointing their attention towards that part of the population and helping them throw rocks at that enemy. So in the weight loss arena, you'll see people say, oh, look at those sugar lobbyists. Look at how they've lobbied to put sugar in everything. It makes it impossible for you to lose weight because there's sugar in everything. Or look at the corn subsidies. Look at the lobbyists for the corn industry. Corn is just a filler food. It has no nutritional value, yet it's in everything. Corn chips and popcorn. That's everything, folks. But corn is actually corn syrup. It's in a lot of stuff. And it doesn't have very much nutritional value. And if you work on a farm, you know, corn is just kind of added to feed for like a filler substance. So you give them an enemy. It's the evil sugar lobbyists. It's the evil corn subsidies. They're the ones. They're the reason that you're fat and out of shape. It's not your fault. It's their fault. Allow them to forgive themselves. Allow them to place the blame somewhere else. And it makes it easier for them to move forward. Because if they're just blaming themselves, if they're saying it's my fault or I'm just born this way or genetics made me fat, then they're not going to be able to move forward because they're blaming. Have you ever known somebody who did something horrible, made a bad mistake, and didn't ever stop blaming themselves for it, even if they weren't really to blame? how easy was it for them to move on? They couldn't until they stopped blaming themselves. So if you want somebody to move on, and move on includes buying your product, you need to give them an excuse to forgive themselves. You need to give them somebody that they can point their fingers at and blame somebody else. The food pyramid is misleading. All the food companies put addictive additives into their food. Diets don't work because they're based on bad science. These are all examples of how the weight loss industry allows, helps you point your fingers at an enemy out there. Avoid taking blame yourself, or get over blaming yourself and throw rocks at somebody else. Now, at that point, now you as the customer or the potential customer feel like these people are on your side. This diet company is on your side. This exercise company is on your side. Or at least you're starting to feel that way. If they really want to take it up, or if you're the marketer and you really want to take it up another notch after you've hit them with the yes statements, and after you've given them an enemy and somebody else to blame and help them throw rocks at that enemy, go a little bit deeper. Point the problems out and make them know, or make them feel like you know the problem even better than they do. If you can explain the problem to them that they're dealing with even better than they can explain it to themselves, they're naturally going to think that you have the solution to that problem. Because if you understand it so well that you can explain it to me better than I can even explain it to me, then you probably understand it well enough to know what the solution to it is. Otherwise, why would you even be telling me this, right? So now they feel like you're on their side, that you're on their team, and now they feel like you understand the problem so well, and more than likely, you have the solution to the problem. So by this time, they're less likely to question anything else that you suggest. Just like when a politician gives you an enemy and points out the problem and explains the problem to you better than you could explain it to yourself, as soon as they start talking about what their solution is, you're a lot less likely to question that solution. Now, if you're on the other side of the aisle and you don't find the same enemy that they're throwing rocks at to be the actual cause of the problem, then when they mention their solution, like let's increase the taxes on everybody, you're going to be like, that's crazy. Or if they suggest the solution of let's build a wall, if they haven't got you on their side, if they haven't identified the enemy for you to throw rocks at together with, then when they suggest raising taxes or building a wall, it's not going to make much sense to you. So these steps have to be taken in order for it to work. But that's the point. Once you have pointed out these enemies, once you've explained the problem better than they can explain it to themselves, and you've got them expecting that you've got the solution, pretty much anything you suggest, they're not going to question it. And, in fact, more often than not, they're going to be waiting. They're going to be hoping that you make a suggestion, because right now they feel stuck. They feel stagnant. They feel helpless. They feel like they haven't been able, they feel powerless. And when you offer a solution, they're going to get that hope again. They're going to get that feeling of maybe it's not all useless. Maybe there is something that I can do to change this situation. And that's what marketing is. It's offering somebody something that can change their situation. And oftentimes that's what politics is all about too, is there's this crappy situation and let me have power over your life and your income and I'll make the situation better. And at this time is when you're going to want to make your call to action. This is when you're going to want to make the offer. If you're trying to sell something, this is when you say, click here to buy this particular thing. If you're trying to get a consultation, say, pick up the phone and call this number to get a free consultation or a paid consultation. This is when you make the call to action. Once you've got them to the point where they're hoping that you've got a suggestion, hoping that you've got some sort of solution to propose to them, then that's the time when you make the suggestion, when you make the call to action, when you tell them what step you want them to take next. Now, the same thing works if you're an activist. All of these same rules apply if you're trying to sell an idea. Say you're a conspiracy theorist. You got to find a common enemy. the Bilderberg Group or the Freemasons or the Jesuits or, those are the kind of top level, more feasible common enemies. And once you've kind of identified, you know, oh, these cigar smoking men who meet in shadowy rooms behind the scenes, they're the reason that everything sucks in the world. Let's get together and throw rocks at them. Let's go out in front of their meeting and bullhorn, shout at them with bullhorns, or let's go do confrontation journalism at these guys, or let's make YouTube videos talking about how horrible they are. You find a common enemy and you help throw rocks at that enemy. And then you show the other person who just kind of got in, and it doesn't even have to be like a secret society. It can be like the fluoride companies. Some people understand that fluoride is bad. It can be the school system. Some people understand how horrible the school system is. Whatever it is, find that overlay, find that area where you agree with them and agree with them on that common enemy and start helping them throw rocks at that common enemy. And then once they feel like you're on their side against that enemy, then you can start adding your own ideas. Then you can start saying, well, yeah, fluoride is pretty horrible, but I mean, that's only part of it. Have you heard about what they're doing? Have you heard about Common Core? Or have you heard about Agenda 21? And if they're kind of like a surface level person who hasn't delved deep into conspiracy theory land, this might be the point where you say, hey, have you heard about the Bohemian Grove? Have you heard about the FEMA camps? But you don't want to jump straight to that point. You want to first get them on your side. You want to get them, you want to find the victim, or you want to find the villain that you both can, that you both share. You want to find the values that you both share. And then once you've convinced them that you think the same way that they do, then you want to start adding some new ideas and show them that it goes a little bit deeper. Once you've both started digging at the same rabbit hole, you can be like, you want to see how deep this rabbit hole really goes. But if you try and just grab somebody and yank them down the rabbit hole before they have any idea of what's going on, they're going to cling for the sides. They're going to kick and fight you the entire way, and you're not going to get anywhere with them. So it's very important that whether it's selling an idea or selling activism or selling a product, you have to do these things in a particular order. Otherwise, you're not going to be effective. And I see so many people that don't understand. This is basic salesmanship, but it's not taught to you in school because the politicians use this and the people that run society use this understanding. And if they taught you this, they wouldn't be able to use it against you. So most of you that are so desperately trying to convince people to pay attention to what's going on, you got great causes, but y'all don't understand how to sell your message. And that's kind of why I'm doing this. That's kind of why, I mean, you can use this to sell your product. You can use this to sell your message. But again, it can be used for bad. So if you're like a COINTELPRO agent, or if you're a politician, or if you're a mouthpiece for one of these mainstream news agencies, which again goes back to maybe you're a COINTELPRO agent, or maybe you're part of Project Mockingbird. If you understand how this works, how these kind of closely guarded secrets of persuasion work, you can take over entire movements and run them into the ground. You can take people who have the greatest intentions and just render them completely useless. And it happens all the time. I see it all the time. And so this knowledge can be used for great elevations of humanity, or it can be used to keep people under control. The secrets of this knowledge are not good, or they're not bad. The people that use these secrets are what add the positive or the negative connotations to this knowledge. And so far, like up until this point in time, it's pretty much just the rulers that use this information. And pretty much most of y'all don't even understand this stuff. It's been kept hidden from you. And it's my sincere hope that more of you out there are really listening to this and taking it serious and understanding what this can mean to improving your activism or to improving your business. So I'm going to go over these steps one more time. So number one, step one, for being persuasive, for understanding and utilizing the guru effect. Step number one, start out on the same page. Start with easy yeses. Start by joining the person in the conversation that they're already having in their own mind. Step number two, give them an enemy to blame. Give them a way to stop blaming themselves and to put the blame on somebody else. Step number three, help them throw rocks at that enemy. Let them know that you're on their side, that you're in the fight with them, that you share a villain, and that you also share values. And then step number four, start adding in your own ideas. Start letting them know about how deep the rabbit hole goes, or start letting them know that, yes, there is a solution to it, to this problem, and I have that solution. And it only cost you 4 easy payments of $19.99. And then step number five, call them to action. If it's in activism, hey, come join us at this particular rally. Or if it's or help us hand out pamphlets, or come jump on my podcast and let's talk about this. If it's in business, hey, click here and buy now. Again, step number one, start out on the same page. Step number two, give them an enemy to blame. Step number three, help them throw rocks at that enemy. Step number four, add in your own ideas. Step number five, call them to action. All right. I lost a lot of listeners, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. Before we go, I'm going to plug this webinar that I've got coming up. Me and Daryl Becker are going to be putting on a webinar. It's going to be all about the Hero's Journey Autoresponder. An autoresponder is basically something that when somebody joins your email list, it kind of warms them up to you. It lets them know what you're about. It gets them in a mode where they trust clicking on the links that are in your email. It helps them understand that you're not just trying to spam them or send them to pages that are going to put viruses on their computer. It's basically the autoresponder series, the introduction autoresponder series, is your one chance to make a good impression with somebody when they first join your email list. And I'm going to walk you through how to write a five-day email series called The Hero's Journey. And it's basically set up to make it to where when somebody signs up for your list, they get to know you, they get to understand that you're going to provide them with value, and they get to understand that when they click on links that are in your email, there's good stuff on the other side. And this is probably where most people who first get into email marketing or get into email newsletters, this is probably the biggest mistake that I see people make. When I help businesses set up their email, or help them improve their email systems, this is probably the biggest thing that we have to go back to step one and start here. When I help podcasters set up their email systems, this is usually the biggest mistake right off the bat that they make, and their unsubscribe rates are horrendous. And my unsubscribe rates and my click through and my open rates are actually pretty good. So I'm going to teach you all of the secrets that I've learned about email marketing, both for my podcast and for my business. So if you're interested in that, make sure that you get signed up for this webinar. Again, only 100 seats are going to be available for this. Daryl Becker from Voluntary Visions is going to be joining me on this. We're going to lay out some really powerful information. Again, top secret stuff that I normally charge people ask tons of money for. And if you're a member of the Free Market Squad and you sign up for this webinar, again, only 100 people are going to be allowed access. But if you get signed up for it, I'm going to give you all of my entire process for the 5-day Hero's Journey email sequence absolutely for free. You can find out more by going to NathanFraserShow.com, clicking on the webinar advertisement on the website there. And you have to do it before August 8th, 2020. and 16, because August 8th is when we're going to be doing the webinar. Hope to see you there. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.